As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ。どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんな
とこ
に。
What's good, internet? It is Monday, October 23rd, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 107. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hello.
And Patrick Klepek, who just finished writing and publishing a pretty big story.
Yeah, let's say the tonal whiplash between playing the sunny and cheering Super Mario Odyssey slightly different than what I spent the last 12 hours with. Just tiny bit. Just a little different.
Well, you actually, like, we'll dig into that in a second, but, like, maybe we should actually just walk people through what like, the weekend looked like for us as the story developed.
That's
kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, it actually goes back before the weekend.
Was it Friday that we started getting
Thursday?
Messages?
It was Thursday or Friday. There was a couple of messages dropped into my inbox from a... I believe the first email came from the title of the – not the email, the author of the email. The sender was NeoGAF is Dirty, and it was like a link, an image dump, like a very confusing, like serial killer, like string everywhere sort of thing. And I was kind of sifting through it, but I was in the middle of, like, I had spent, like, the better part of, like, a day and a half writing this South Park piece that went up on Friday afternoon. And so it was, a lot of things come in my inbox, and – it's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'll get to that as I get through things. And I had flagged it in our Discord as being like, this seems, it came from a questionable source, so I don't even know if any of this is true. But like,
wait,
hey,
you don't think NeoGAF is dirty at whatever.com?
At NeoGAFisDirty.com?
Yeah, exactly.
It was like sort of like flagged it for like everyone else to be like, hey, if you see something about this, like give me a heads up. And then like, if I don't get to it before then maybe we'll know if something's happening. And so Friday afternoon rolls around. I write the South Park piece, goes up, and I just was not something I had a chance to look into. And because the couple of emails I'd gotten, one of them was like a long screed about how I'm a bad person. And then with another link to one of these things, it was just it didn't really tee me up to be like, time to go see what these people are upset about.
Yeah. Right. That South Park piece, which was like, anytime that you write something that's like, here is my history with this thing, here are my complicated feelings, and also here is me dumping on a thing that lots of people like. Like, even though I'm pretty confident in my take on it, like, I know I'm pissing people off. Like,
it's going to be one of those things where some people can come away thinking, like, well, you're telling me I'm a bad person if I like this thing, which is not obviously not the takeaway, but you end up getting people who mix up their own personal feelings with the thing you're criticizing, and then all of a sudden that takes you down a pretty nasty rabbit hole.
Totally.
So that happens, and then over the weekend,
also, there's a background there, too, that I think is worth mentioning, which is, like, whenever people start bringing up, so NeoGAF, I guess, really broadly, for people who don't know, NeoGAF is a very popular,
I guess up until, the last, 48 hours, but, like, up until, this broke, I mean, NeoGAF was Reddit before Reddit was, you know, 4chan before, I mean, 4chan may have existed alongside, but NeoGAF's been around in some form or another for 18 years. Like, it just goes back really, really far. Like, that's where, like, you know, EGM writers, like, used to, like, talk to each other. I mean,
yeah.
I will have a separate piece probably later this week that talks about, I mean, I owe my career to GAF before it was NeoGAF. It used to be, the GAF part is Gaming Age Forums. It was part of Gaming Age, which was one of the more seminal video game websites where folks like Mark McDonald and other people came up through. A lot of EGM editors came through Gaming Age. A lot of the people that went on to do like 1UP and stuff 1UP like that came. Yeah. 1UP is Gaming Age, essentially like the proto 1UP. Like everything that 1UP became started from a lot of the writers at Gaming Age. And Gaming Age split into NeoGAF, and that's where the Neo part comes from. When Gaming Age got to a certain popularity, that there were like both copyright issues where people were posting like scans and leaked screenshots and like different leaks and rumors would appear on the site, and there was like publisher pressure to delete threads. And this is such early days in like video game journalism. Like there wasn't even really journalism at that point.
Yeah, it was like enthusiast press at best. It was mostly just like, we are fans, we are consumers, here's new stuff coming out. Publishers, please give us like bad screenshots that we can include. Yeah.
So, like a cease and desist
or good
come
bullshots.
Right, exactly. Yes. Lots of bullshots. So, when a cease and desist that came through, like you took it seriously because it wasn't, that just was not the structure of a place like Gaming Age, and wasn't the structure for a lot of enthusiast websites. But
there was flexibility if perhaps there was just a form that was not publishing as an outlet, as a publication.
And so that's where NeoGAF came from. I don't know the specifics on how legally it occurred. I know that the owner of Gaming Age, Jim Cordera, who was a good friend of mine a long time ago, hopefully you're doing well, Jim, if you're still out there. and I know some ads for Gaming Age run on NeoGAF. So again, I don't know the exact legal and financial, but essentially like NeoGAF became the ownership of Tyler Malka. I believe I've never actually till this moment said his name out loud, so I'm going to hope that I got that right. Also known as Evil Lore on the internet. And he has a pretty people have feelings about him. Arrogant would be certainly a way of characterizing some of the way that he has talked over the years, but he was able to back that up because partially due to him and partially due to the people around him, like and probably also partially because of circumstance, GAF became this incredible melting pot where you had lots of really hardcore enthusiast game fans, game developers, reporters. Like it was just kind of, it felt like this exclusive club where things kind of flattened and it was all anonymous largely. But everyone got a chance to talk to one another, and it was this really cool place where, like, I had been told, this is probably less true now than it was back then, but there was a time where like major games were greenlit, major decisions were made based on the conversations that were happening at not GAF, but NeoGAF. Like it was at one point used as like, before like we had as many metrics as we have now, before we have as many sort of sources for metrics and influence and response, GAF was essentially like the, what's the temperature of video game fans right now? And if GAF put their thumb down, I mean, then that was like used as a data point to make hugely consequential decisions.
Well, and it's hard to know how well GAF of that era represented gaming and gaming culture and gamers at large. But it's easy to think about it and like a few other key places as representing different types of gaming communities and people who were part of the gaming culture. Like, I think about like that era of like GAF and like the GameFAQ forums as being like a pretty clear divide between people who like liked games and wanted to talk about them at GameFAQs, and then like the things that were happening at NeoGAF to me as an outsider who was like not a journalist and was like interested in games was always like, all right, these people know a little bit more about the industry. They like everyone wants to know what NPD numbers are. Everyone wants to like, everyone knows the name of designers and developers and like who the chairman is of Sony or whatever, right? Like that stuff, everyone there kind of prided themselves on being a little bit more in like insider. Which I think ends up being like part of the story of NeoGAF that I think a lot of people ended up feeling, which is like, this place kind of fucking sucks also.
You're right.
like, It felt like a boys' club. It felt like very consumer-driven, consumer-first, right? Like, which at the time felt almost progressive because it was like, no, we have consumer rights, and like if this game is broken, we're gonna pass around screenshots, and we have people who like I remember going to NeoGAF years and years ago, like in the Justin TV era, to find secret streams of unreleased games, or to find videos of glitches in games
right.
where the publisher was out saying like, no, the game is great, and they're like, no, dog, like look at all these videos that have been uploaded to Daily Motion. Like it is bad. It looks bad. And so there was definitely at the time a sort of like you could kind of see the value of like almost consumer like advocacy and like almost citizen journalism around games at the time. But I think in the last few years you've seen this weird like two things have happened. On one hand. And this is this is kind of all where I wanted to get to is like you have it becoming a place where you can go to see people get like get called names and there's like a kind of a very aggressive insider culture of GAF and like it's very hard to break into GAF. It always felt like again there's kind of a boys club atmosphere to it. But also around the time of Gamergate, GAF kind of pretty quickly was like, nah, this is bullshit. Like, I call bullshit. This is not about ethics and games journalism. Fuck off with this, like, misogyny. Fuck off with
a
this.
A lot faster than yes. any editorial places, yes. you know, places I worked for, places other places worked for. Like, yeah. there are, I don't, you know, I may in hindsight be giving them more credit than they were doing how fast it was, but it was assuredly faster than most people who were paid to do this decided this is bullshit. We're not going to entertain it. We're not going to do the two sides of them. And they didn't just bans, locked threads. Like it was very quickly. They just said, if you say the term Gamergate and you're not doing it in a way that is essentially suggesting this is all really terrible, that right. you're just not welcome here, which for, the complicated politics of a lot of places on the internet that, you know, claim to be progressive, that, you know, allowed NeoGAF, rightly so in some ways, to say, like, actually we're trying to do right by, you know, some measure of people, at least in regards to this very specific thing.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is because part of that response on Friday from us was like, all right, is this another time that, like, there's a secret 4chan op to take down to take down NeoGAF?
Yeah.
Because that's the sort of thing that has happened multiple times. And it also, I think, speaks to the complicated relationship that you've seen from lots of people as the things that have gone on, as NeoGAF has started to tumble, in that on one hand, you have lots of people who are from marginalized communities saying, like, you know what? Fuck NeoGAF, actually. Like, I never felt safe there. And then you also have people from Gamergate saying, like, haha, we killed NeoGAF, which is not true. One.
NeoGAF killed NeoGAF.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, shitty behavior from someone who is an ass, who presents like an asshole at the very least, is what kills NeoGAF here. And mods who stood up and walked away. And like the revelation that shouldn't have been a revelation that, as always, communities are only as strong as there are mods there to kind of do the heavy lifting, right? Like, the mods build that place and without mods, like, it's all just going to go to shit instantly.
Danny, I'm curious for before we get into the story and the allegations, like, what was your perspective of that website? Like, I feel I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like you might have been one of those people that was kind of like, fuck that place.
Yeah, very much so. So I definitely it's a little bit funny to me with the timing, because on Friday night, one of the last things I did in Austin, if you remember this, at like 7 on Friday night, I was like, I just looked up from my computer with like a very disdainful look. And I was like, I made a mistake. I looked on GAF again. Because like, to be completely clear, there are great threads on GAF. I don't want to like completely, you know, take a crap on all of it. I enjoyed OTs. Like, I enjoyed the sort of, you know,
there's
cumulative efforts of people who are actually putting together all the criticism on a game or something like that. That was cool. But our thread just, you know, I'm just going to say a lot of people were very critical of how I host podcasts and present on podcasts. And it made me a little depressed. And it was stupid for me to go looking for, like, constructive criticism as opposed to just
people don't like me. I'm not sure I would call all that stuff constructive. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah.
it's, you know, I had a very similar experience to you for the years I worked at Giant Bomb where there's a very active I guess now it's all was, so I have to change my terms. active thread about Giant Bomb. It was a Giant Bomb community thread, and they would, you know, discuss what would have on the site. And
hundreds of pages. Like, yeah,
thousands. Yeah, like if, you know, whereas our page probably updates like a full page of comments every couple of weeks, this is like 10 pages a day, like, you know, easily when nothing's going on. And actually, it usually filled up the fastest when nothing was happening on the site and people were upset that nothing was on the site.
And it's so easy to just be like, I'm going to click it and see what they're saying.
Because you want validation, you want feedback. And so I would find myself going in there, and then all of a sudden, it would be the same as, you know, you, Danielle, where it'd be like, oh, well, Patrick's not... He's not funny like Vinny and Jeff are. And like, or like, I had a pimple that day and it's like, the fuck's wrong with that guy's face? And it was like, what am I doing here? Like, this isn't, I don't feel good about this.
Vinny and I ended up having lots of conversations about it. Not only because of shit that like people would give me, because obviously people at Gaff would give me lots of pretentious, lots of like, Austin just wants to use big words, lots of calling out specific vocal tics. Patrick, I don't know if you've ever, if that's ever happened for you. I talk about it, saying like, we've been there, I fucking mean it. We're like,
no, I know.
What's the one for you, Patrick? Do you remember what the one was?
This was actually fair, and a lot of podcasters work on this over time, is like getting rid of the word like
as a verbal
tick. That one was fair. That's on me. That was just something I needed with time. But it was ostensibly word that Ryan Davis and I sort of stumbled upon, and then the both of us like used it a bunch of times, and he moved on, but it just like stuck with me in the same way that like does. Like, the reason a verbal tick exists is usually it becomes a crutch when you're halfway through formulating a thought and you need to buy time and you're just looking for a transition word. And that's what like functions as for a lot of people. And for whatever reason, probably because I was trying to desperately not say like, is that I then swapped in ostensibly because I was used, it was just a bullshit word I could use all the time. But then anytime I did that, it would come up in not a fun, like, let's rib Patrick sort of way. It'd be like, like, what is this dope doing on this podcast with all these A+ podcasters? Like, get this shitbag out of here. And it was like, it would actually like really influence like how I felt about myself and my work. And what I needed to understand was like, one, people should have a space where like the creators, like they should be allowed to talk about my face if they want. Like, I'm not saying that that's okay. I'm not saying, like, I would say that. That's not, like, I don't want to go have those conversations about people.
Patrick, your face is
good. Patrick, you've got a great face.
Well, I finally went and got some cream like 6 months ago, and I really wish I'd gotten that cream. I just put it out for a long time. Now my face is not clear.
If they had posted, hey, Patrick, there's some cream you can get for your face to make it a good face.
If it were constructive, it would be, and that's what I was looking for, because frankly, a lot of times in that thread, there was constructive criticism. Right. There was something I could actually take and say, oh, okay, you know what? Maybe I am just kind of going, yeah, or uh-huh, or cackling too much. Like, I get it. Like, I want to get better at things. I want to improve. When my coach tells, you know, in wrestling or jiu-jitsu, when my coach is telling me, no, you're doing something wrong, I'm like, good, yes, please tell me what I'm doing wrong. I would like to fix it, but... In the last couple of months, it was just turned to a lot of, like, vaguely sexist, like, you know, like, pitting me against the other woman on the team kind of thing. Or, you know, just shit that's just not shit. Useful, and that's, you know?
That stuff is why I think for a lot of people that Gaff never felt, not safe even, but just, like, never felt good. It just never felt good to be there, is because there were certain attitudes that reflected, like, a sort of old-fashioned, like, cultural, like, company culture almost, right? Like, there is such a thing as a forum culture in terms of like what jokes fly, what ones don't, what reads as constructive criticism and what doesn't. And what I ended up doing is the same thing that you did, Patrick, which is like, you have to at some point say, and this was from, you know, Vinny talking to me over at Giant Bomb, was like, there needs to be a place where people can talk about your work and you the way that they talk about movie stars, the way that they talk about rock musicians, the way that they talk about politicians. And like, it is weird to think of that because you're an individual who does not have the degree of celebrity and stability that, say,
or
a
the
movie
bank
star
account
has. That's what I mean.
See, that's,
that's
where
exactly.
I'm gonna push back. They can afford a lot of therapy. Like, they can afford
I talked to my friend and friends at the table, you know, co-star Art about it, and a phrase that he often uses is like, man, that's what the money is for. And
exactly.
But we don't have that. Like, we are out in the public, but we are not public figures in the sense that we have huge bank accounts. But that definitely gave us, I think, a very specific relationship with Gaff. Yeah. Because you get this view of both sides of, like, in fact, you get this view of Gaff as almost being, like, pardon Gaff, but, like, a very centrist position where the people over at a very centrist place where the people in Gamergate are like, yo, fuck Gaff. And then, like, the people who are, like, who are targeted by Gamergate are also sometimes like, yo, fuck Gaff. And so it was funny to see over the weekend as the story developed, those attitudes kind of bubbling up, and then the sort of like also alongside of it, people saying like, I will never go to Gaff in my life. Also, I wouldn't be here without Gaff, because when I was 16, when I was 20, as a reporter, I you know, go to Gaff every day to read the thread, but I'll never have an account there because it's just like gross or whatever. And so it's been interesting to see everybody come out and kind of present their perspectives. In any case.
Yeah.
All of that is to say why we didn't just jump on those tips immediately. Yeah. Also, it's Friday afternoon. Everyone's tired. And it's like, okay, this is going to be another thing that slowly happens over the course of the next week. Like, we have time to go talk to people, to look into these allegations, to report on it slowly. Because that's normally what happens, right? Like, you're able to, like, send out an email over the weekend and see, like, oh, hey, do you have time to speak on Monday? Okay, we'll set up a call. And then Saturday, I feel like, Patrick, I sent you a text. Saturday?
Yeah, so Saturday, I mentioned this, the podcast a week ago, because I wasn't on Friday's cast, right. Which was very good, by the way. Side note, if you haven't,
thank you.
I'm sure most people have listened to the interview you guys did with Manveer.
Shout out to Manveer.
Manveer is amazing.
But yeah, like, I remember mentioning last week that, like, I, you know, like, in fairly recent months have, like, tried to set aside weekends as, like, a place where, like, I'm just with my kid and my family and, like, the things that make me happy, just because I've spent a lot of time writing about, like, weird shit and dark stuff in the last, like, 6 months. And so it's, like, I just need, like, a space to have that stuff happen. But, my wife went to bed pretty early on Saturday, and then I was sitting there playing Mario and I'm, like, checking Twitter, and then all of a sudden I started seeing all this stuff happening, getting passed around, and getting a lot of mentions. But again, a lot of those mentions were coming from clearly people with, like, disingenuous motives, in which they were very much a part of this thread that we alluded to earlier, in which, like, the reason they wanted Tyler Malka to be found to be, you know, a monster or the allegations to prove true is not because they actually want justice for the woman who was making the allegations. Right. They just wanted what was seen as anti-Gamergate or a progressive beacon, which I don't use that as a term because I think it was, I'm just saying that, like, relative to Gamergate, it was viewed that way because of the stances they were taking.
We're going to just take a quick break for an ad. We will be right back.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
They wanted to just see it taken down because it contributes to something that happens a lot in alt-right circles and a lot of these subversive circles in which their goals are really just to create infighting amongst progressives, liberals, people on the left. And so taking out figures of the left, and this is why they've reveled so much in the Harvey Weinstein stuff, contributes to that cause because chaos equals advancement of the cause, even if that cause has no actual end. So I saw that, but then started hearing from people that I knew. I heard from you who, you know, you pay a little more attention to that stuff on the weekend. It was like, okay, like something's going on here.
Gaff all through Saturday evening was just like up and down over and over. It was getting DDoSed or something was happening. It wasn't very clear.
Well, specifically, I saw screenshots of a thread where someone – well, so you know what? This starts because – It must have been on Friday afternoon, and this is how this thread stayed with me, and then people were updating me through this thread, was there was a bot that I followed on Twitter that's like NeoGAF new thread, and it's just in my gaming column. Right. It's part of what I use to just keep track of what people are doing. And it said the account, or the thread was called, this is probably account suicide, ... And I immediately clicked it. I was like, God, I don't know what the fuck's in this thread. And it was gone. Like, the bot is automated, you know, like this. So that thread was deleted almost instantaneously. And then what happened was over the weekend, people started replying to that, like, thread with, like, screenshots and clear sets of allegations. And that's what got, like, you, me, and other people starting to look at this as though, okay, this seems like this has gone beyond the threshold, like, regardless of the shitty actors participating, that does not mean this isn't necessarily a story that deserves or doesn't deserve our full attention, which is that then, so Saturday evening, like, I'm trying to play Mario and eventually just gave up. Like, I just, like, I was texting with someone. I was just like, I am so crushed right now that I can't even enjoy Mario Odyssey. So I'm just going to put on The Strangers and send emails and just sit on this couch until I fall asleep, which is what happened at around 11:15. And started sending emails. Like, I put out I'm lucky enough to have a large following on Twitter where I can just sort of ask for help. And people are very thankfully often come forward with information that can kind of help me wrap my head around complicated stories. And so I guess to set up what actually got us to start thinking about this and investigating it, there was an allegation made on Facebook. It was not a public post. It was not like, I'm going on medium.com and I'm going to write a call out post for Tyler Malka. This was
a private communication from a woman who was joining in the hashtag MeToo social media thing,
on Facebook, on Twitter, right? It's not like she had a Twitter account that has like 10 followers and it's just her friends. Like, it's a private Facebook account, which this woman, Emma Lee Up, told the story about her and what was referred to as a friend who went on a road trip to New Orleans. And then she goes from there we won't do the whole back and forth. If you want to read the story and hear the entire thing, I'll just kind of give the setup for her allegations, and then I will just tell you that the story then interrogates those allegations, and we can talk about them here, but we don't need to do the whole he said, she said on the podcast. But so Liep had gone on this trip with Tyler. She was polyamorous. Is that how you pronounce that? And in an open relationship, but she had a boyfriend, and the open part of her relationship was with women. And so she was in a committed sort of thing at the moment with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend had met Tyler, and they were all cool. You know, like, it was like, oh, hey, this is just a friend. You guys can go on a road trip. Like, go have fun. And so Tyler and Emma go on this road trip to New Orleans. They had known each other from becoming friends over the years, and Tyler had been he'd been like an actor in some of her video shoots. She's a director that does work down in Texas, so like they were close in a friend sort of way, and in a lot of like relationships that I'm sure we all have with people of both genders. They go to New Orleans. They have a lot to drink. She has too much to drink, and then begins
gets sick,
goes into the bathroom.
She's
vomiting. Like, you're not just like, oh, I don't feel well. Like, throwing up into this bathroom, and she then goes into the shower to sort of clean herself up. And she alleges that Tyler then entered into the bathroom, entered into the shower fully naked, and approached her from behind. Didn't give a playful heads up or like, hey, is it okay if I come in? And she immediately tells him, like, this isn't outside of just the surface level of like, who wants to go initiate sex with someone who is clearly going into the beginning of a hangover?
That is not a good look. Even, let me be honest, if I had a partner who was in the bathroom puking, I wouldn't be like, I might be in there like holding hair back, or like with a bucket and a mop, like, but like, that's not time to make a move, my guy. Not at all.
She tells him like, this is inappropriate, and he leaves. Nothing untoward happens after that. It was obviously a very like creepy, strange maneuver. They have a talk about it the next day, which is that, hey, this was inappropriate, you can't act this way, like, that's not this was not, we don't have this kind of relationship. Like, right. we are right. friends, and if I was going to have sex with anyone, it's going to be my boyfriend and or a woman Someone of my else. Choosing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Based on how her relationship was set up at the time. And from her, you know, I interviewed her earlier this morning, and, you know, from her perspective, like, he took to that. And she's like, I work in, not Hollywood, but, you know, she works in film and deals with a lot of awkward and weird people and internet friends. And she yep. said, that's not an excuse, but she's like, sometimes there are instances in which people are drunk, do something inappropriate, and then when they are told, they realize the error of their ways and maybe they learn something from it. Right. And her thought was that was this situation that, like, I have no reason to not to trust Tyler for all the – she was helping him – or helping her network for her film right. company. And it just – she thought, like, this was a teachable moment. Nothing went way too far, and we're just going to move forward from here.
Right. Oh, this is, like, one of the things that's so frustrating with the response to stories like this often is you have people who say, like, well, why did she even – keep talking to him. And it's like, if she didn't, you'd be saying, oh, everybody deserves a second chance. He was just drunk. Like,
right.
you can't have it both ways. Like, she did what was a very generous thing in saying, like, all right, I'm going to walk you through why you fucked up. And allegedly, this is her side of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in her version of the story, like, then did the next step, which was like, all right, like, as long as we're cool, we're cool. Like, we're going to keep hanging out. And we're going to finish this trip and maybe I'll see you some other time too. Like, I think that part of the story, as she tells it, like, completely holds up with the sorts of stories that I have, you know, that are common among my friends, among, like, the other women I know who've dealt with this. Like, this does not seem out of character, you know, in our generation.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely true. And so, they did. She, you know, cites this incident in which she felt profoundly guilty. It's very common in, you know, what I've read about, you know, instances of sexual misconduct and my own interviews and reporting I've done that where she felt guilty and as though she had brought that on in some way is a feeling that she was going through after the incident occurred. And when she realized that if she told her boyfriend, She didn't feel the confidence to actually tell her boyfriend what happened because she was afraid of how it looked upon her. She felt like that said something about her and her relationship. So it kind of led directly to the dissolution of that relationship because of her complicated feelings for how she felt about her own participation or non-participation in the events that occurred. And so they did have consensual sex later. That was, you know, something where it's not in the story, but described to me that she didn't feel great about it, but it was not something in which he did anything untoward. She had broken up with her boyfriend, and they were still friends. You know, this was part of the second chance thing, and that stuff happens. I think if you were to have a talk with any of your friends who are women, I think you would hear all sorts of, like, weird, confusing sort of situations that arise out of complicated relationships like this. But then they meet up again in E3, where Tyler had booked an Airbnb for both his friends and for her to come down. They were sharing a bed because they were close friends, but at that point they, at least in Ema's telling of the story, it was a platonic sort of thing. They were just friends. They were in the bed together because it was an Airbnb and people were sleeping where they could sleep. You know, it was just, you know, that,
right.
Some X amount of space. And Tyler portrays it very differently. And, like, without getting into the, you know, he said, she said of the rest of the event, like, suffice to say that her interpretation of events that involve another woman, her perspective is that she was protecting or raising warnings about the actions that Tyler was taking that seemed to involve trying to get a woman drunk and being a little handsy and raising objections over that because she had seen some of that happen to her and it was very uncomfortable for her to watch that to happen to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler's interpretation of that was to, in a series of statements to me that I genuinely were shocked to get.
Yeah.
Cause as far as I know, Tyler only talked to me. Maybe because I have a history with the website
right.
or the forum, I don't know. But certainly before any sort of public statement was made on social media or on NeoGAF itself, spins the whole tale as sort of like a soap opera in which it's a lover's triangle and very directly pins any sort of reactions from Ima as being a result of her mental illness.
Quote unquote, that is his.
Yes, that is his phrasing, up to and including evidence that of her mental illness because she deleted the Facebook post in which she made the original allegations, which is not true. It's that once they went viral, her profile was getting bombarded and shared all over the place. And that was just one of several posts she had made.
Right.
In participation of the Me Too campaign, in which people were raising awareness about sort of everyday sexual misconduct. And she didn't need a bunch of strangers screenshotting her sexual history. Right. She didn't need a reporter like myself or Cecilia over at Kotaku talking to her about her like sexual, like the idea that I just said a couple of minutes ago, and then she had consensual sex with this man. Like, in no world really should I be having to say those words, know that history,
that you need to have in your life. That is a thing that she did in her life. But like, as a reporter, you had to get the complicated details of this person's day. Like, she has to go to work tomorrow, presumably. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't stop existing outside of the frame of the story.
Yes, and, you know, and then she, you know, part of the reason she said she spoke with me was specifically because I had reached out to her. At that point, I believe she had talked to Cecilia at Kotaku, and I couldn't have blamed her. She never got back to me. But then I got these really fascinating, I guess is the word, responses from Tyler, and I passed them on to her because I couldn't in good conscience. I needed to impress upon her, not that I needed her to speak with me, but that the absence of her considering out in the open, if it just would have been Tyler being able to say, oh, and she's mentally ill.
Yeah.
Like that's something that I think anyone can feel an understanding of why they would feel a need to respond to that. And so that's
especially when the, you know, it is two stories, and we are not in a position to, because we are journalists, because we are speaking as a publication and not as private individuals, like, there are legal repercussions for us saying what we think happened or didn't happen, which is, like, if you're wondering why we're hedging, it is because our legal team has impressed that upon us in the past, and it's a bummer to get pulled into a legal office and chided. But the thing that I will say is that, like, just looking at their statements, the fact that hers is like, okay, here's the thing he fucked up and did, and then the next day we talked about it and like tried to move on from there, versus like, oh, she's mentally ill, is it immediately starts painting a picture. And that picture only gets like clearer for me in terms of how Tyler presents and speaks and writes and tries to lead the team at NeoGAF, as you dig deeper. Deeper into Tyler's past history online, previous accusations made against him, which we kind of continued to dig up as things progressed over the weekend. And again, you just see this, like, this image of someone who has a very different understanding of consent than I do, and than I think a lot of people do, and who, in general, just like makes these very extreme claims that center himself as a targeted victim and rarely address the notion and that
the world around me is wrong.
Not because I did anything.
I think there were three red flags there for me just reading the piece. Again, I don't know anything that you don't know, of course.
Right.
But the fact first that he would blame something on mental illness, which has been the dog whistle for all time, sort of discrediting women when they make accusations, discrediting women when they say something has happened. Right. That is sort of the oldest trick in the book, basically.
She's hysterical.
She's hysterical. Exactly. The term hysteria, like in itself, right?
Right.
Absolutely is like, oh, don't believe women with their weird women problems. That's the whole, you know, that's the idea behind it. Second thing being, of course, the sort of attitude presented, and the third thing being absolutely the, which I'm sure we'll get into it now, but sort of that screen grab that shows the way he's talked about previous accusations, the way he's talked about consent, the way he's talked about, I don't ask girls to kiss them because I don't have a pocket protector. Like, this idea that having an idea of affirmative consent, you know, consent where you actually ask a person if something is okay, that that's for nerds, that's for losers. Like, it's that absolutely to me was like, yep, red flag right there. That is terrifying. You know? Yeah.
Right. Well, and that came up through a series of posts that had arrived via, like, people had started sending those around again. They're from 2012, right, Patrick? The sort of blog that he'd made of traveling across Europe and a number of encounters he had there that were almost all, like, not always. I didn't read the entire collection, but the collection of screen grabs that you saw and that, he commented on and confirmed that those were posts that he made. To be clear, these are not just, like, doctored screen grabs that are floating around.
And he responded, like, in the piece, right. Like, responds to the, like, it you know, confirms their existence, even though Gaff is down right now, because he responded specifically to my question of, like, well, you got to admit this looks pretty bad, like, you know, like, when put against these two.
It's just, like, his like, sexual dominance, and I don't just mean that, like, literally in the bedroom, but, like, in terms of his behavior at clubs, his behavior around women in public. There's a specific story that he tells that involves a woman asking him to buy her a drink and then him you know, touching her butt because he wanted to make it clear that this was going to be, like, a tit-for-tat relationship and not just, like, God. Oh, yeah, you can push me around. You can take it – you can quote-unquote take advantage of me. And in, like, the explanation he gave you for that, the tone just shifts so dramatically from, like, and that's how I treat people. I let them know that I'm in charge, to, like, oh, you know, it was very playful. She had already been sitting on my lap. Like, this was a very, like, fun exchange. Like, and it is
even if that's true, right? It's like the reason, the way he wrote it originally.
Yes.
Reflects a certain attitude to how you want to present around men, because you know, that's largely what, you know, NeoGaf is, you know, young white males, and so it's like, you can, like, two things can be true. Like, he could have exaggerated that story because he wanted to look cool, and that actually what was happening was the story he tells me,
right?
But even if you were to take that at face value and give him that credit, like, what it says about him and his views on consent and how to treat women when he writes his experience that way, because he wants to be seen in a certain light, still says something deeply troubling about, like, the way society, like, rewards certain types of male behavior among women.
Right, exactly. Which is still a red flag, right? Like, yes. I don't know. It is so hard because when you tell a story like this, when you report a story like this, you get so into the nitty gritty that it ends up being, you don't want to just present like a he said, she said. But at the same time, there is value in letting, in working out a way to present a comprehensive or holistic picture of what these positions are so that readers can make a knowledgeable judgment, especially in a situation like this where, this wasn't a person. He is not just like, we've dealt with stories in the past where someone will have said, like, some really truly bigoted shit. And then what we have to then say is, like, okay, do we want those words even to be on our platform? There's a story. Who knows if it'll ever finish, or we've been in, like, edits.
The idea that this story published in 12 hours and this other story that we're quietly alluding to and that we'll explain at a later date, is still in the mix.
Speaks to that there are times when we've been like, okay, hey, this other story is not a thing that we want to pursue right now, or like, oh, hey, this other, you know, this person is like not just like homophobic, but virulently homophobic, or like not just to the degree that, like, it's not just like we want them to we don't want to just give them enough rope, as people often say, right? Like, right. So that, like, okay, the reader will be able to read that this person said some shitty stuff, and so we'll let them kind of hang themselves in the public sphere by saying something shitty, and everyone goes like, whoa, that's terrible. There are things that are so bad that it's like, I'm not here to boost this, but this isn't that. Like, this is like, this person has a specific allegation made against them, and it is totally within rights for him to say, like, no, that's not what happened. But instead, what he fucking said was, no, actually, she's mentally ill. And it's like, oh my god, no. Like, this is not a great line of defense when it does what Danielle said, which is, like, exists inside of this continuity of men doing that again and again and again. Instead of saying a million other things that he could have said here. And the thing is that, like, it's weird because we're in this place where the quote-unquote bigger story is this the end of Gaff? But that minimizes and reduces this woman's experience so dramatically.
Yeah.
And I'm always cautious of doing the same thing that I would critique the people at Gamergate and similar, you know, in similar groups, similar organizations who wanted to use her, this encounter that she had, this sexual misconduct that she faced as a pawn, as like a tactical event that they could, seize upon and like use to wound one of their targets in NeoGAF. I'm cautious about doing the same thing and being like, okay, well, now that we've talked about this, you know, right. Sexual misconduct allegation, now we can get to the real story, which is NeoGAF. So I want to be clear that that's like not – the real story is that like millions of women, hundreds of millions of women, billions of women suffer sexual misconduct, sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and that like we are in the middle of a bunch of those stories being told right now. We need to keep telling those stories. We need to keep reporting those stories. We need to keep like chasing down those stories as best we can. A thing that we didn't do a couple of weeks ago when we told this story about when we talked about the Naughty Dog allegations was that we didn't give any resources for what to do if you've suffered sexual harassment, sexual misconduct in any way at a workplace or anywhere else. This is me reminding myself that when we publish this podcast today, it should include links out to resources.
We can, I think an easy one to kind of go to and one that I've vetted quite a bit, at least on some level, would be RAIN. That's kind of a pretty easy one for people. It's RAINN. Of course, you want me to read the mission statement? I got it right here.
Sure.
RAIN, which stands for Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, which, by the way, they also do a lot, everything in the full spectrum of sexual misconduct. So they deal with harassment as well as rape, incest, and misconduct in general. So it's the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization. RAIN created and operates the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 800-656-HOPE, and also it's online.rain.org and rain.org/ES, in partnership with more than 1,000 local sexual assault service providers across the country. There's also a DOD safe helpline. There are special resources for LGBT people. There are special resources for people in the military. They have a lot of resources on their site. So they are a good place to go to for that. And I would just say this as someone who has been sexually harassed and been assaulted even at work, that there can be a lot of guilt. And I'm not speaking at all about this specific woman, but there can be a certain kind of guilt in telling your story when you feel like your story isn't as bad as some other people's stories. Mm-hmm. Like I know a lot of people who are survivors of extremely brutal sexual assault and rape, and feeling like, oh, you know, if I was groped or certain things or you know, a situation where, you know, something really not okay happened, but, you know, I'm okay physically. Tell folks to get help even in those other situations, because it can really mess with your head in a lot of ways. Right. Don't hesitate.
Right. Don't hesitate to get help. And at the same time, I also think it's probably worth saying, in the midst of all of this Me Too campaign, like, I am, you know, obviously, and maybe not obviously, maybe it's worth saying that I am impressed and thankful to any woman anyone who is willing to share their story about being sexually harassed or sexually assaulted, but also that, like, I also have a lot of sympathy for the people who are like, I'm actually not in a place where I want to confront my trauma.
Absolutely.
Or where my trauma should become a teaching tool for, like, dudes who, for whatever reason, can't just take it at word that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. So a lot of sympathy for folks who are not in a place where they want to dig into this for whatever reason. So if you're one of those people, please you know that as far as I'm concerned, you know, as far as my word goes, as far as my opinion goes, like, no judgment on you for not wanting to pick up the weight of like using your personal trauma as a teaching tool. So
absolutely. And there are ways you can get help with it being completely anonymous and not having to tell anybody that you know in your life. That's right. Also what help hotlines are for. It's a way that you can potentially get some kind of help with it without ever having to tell anyone in your life or have that risk associated right. with it.
Totally. So, like, clear, like, I think that is the heart of this, and is, especially in this year where more and more of these stories come out, like, that is the thing I wanted to spend some time on there. I am curious, like, what does this mean for GAF going forward? Or more importantly, what does this mean for communities inside of gaming on the internet going forward? Like, what fills this gap? Does it come back? Like, I mean, Tyler seemed to, you know, Malka seemed to tell you that his plan is to bring GAF back ASAP.
Well, yeah, there's a right, like, literally, you know, right before
seconds
I published
before
on the story.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, seconds before I got a response to a story or for a question I sent him last night, in which I was like, what's the next step here? Before I forget, I just want to make one aside, because I thought of this before and I don't want to forget it again.
Yep.
When we mentioned that there were allegations from 2012, like, I want to make it clear, I had no idea that there were allegations from 2012. Yeah. I also don't want to say that necessarily there would have been the kind of reporting done from outlets like ourselves or Kotaku. I think a lot has changed in the last 5 years. Not that it shouldn't have been taken seriously. Not that it wasn't as unsettling then as it is now. But I think, you know, I think there's a big difference in the way we think about and talk about, report about this stuff in the last 5 years. And so I can say that I didn't know, but I can't necessarily say that I would have taken it as seriously, because I think my own, like, way of looking at this, like, my own weight I put into the time I spend on reporting things, like, has changed in a way that, like, shows meaningful progress in how we talk and report and support, you know, the idea of, like, believing women when they come forward. So I just wanted to make that, because there some people come out, it's like, oh, reporters have been protecting him for 5 years. And it's like, I have no reason to protect the owner of NeoGAF. but I also think there is something to be said about the way we talk about this stuff that has changed, especially post Harvey Weinstein. But definitely in the last 5 years, I think there has been a substantial shift in just the seriousness that is taken of reporting on things like this. So that aside, Tyler had mentioned that the plan was for the site was back online after being, was it DDoSed? Is that how you say that?
Yeah, that's how I always say it.
DDoSed? So. Pretty much all weekend. So the site is back up in the sense that it says it's under maintenance. Tyler had told me that it'll be up with posting again in some form later tonight. He's mentioned that he was worried that it would be DDoSed again, so who knows how long that'll last. My guess is that GAF will probably be dealing with that for a while. Yeah. More interestingly, said that the solution to this problem, which was not to make a public statement about what happened, was not to do something other than answer reporters' emails. Like, look, I love getting answers to my questions, but if I was a consultant for this, I would have said, don't be talking to reporters. You should be talking to your community and engaging with them. Like, that's – anyway. He mentioned that his solution to this, or at least the approach going forward, is that shit is just so complicated and politically charged in 2017 that they just need to refocus on video games.
Oh, just gotta get back to gaming.
God.
What matters, what really matters.
Which is a really just strange, like, way to view that, which is not to, like double down. Like, look, like I'm going to re-examine my own behavior. We're going to, like, come up with new policies that, like, you know, like...
Yep.
But instead it's like, oh, actually, like, the shit that got... To bring this stuff up, like, fucking politics and, like, gender studies, like, I get that shit off the forum.
Well, that's part of the other thing, too, is, like, part of his behavior as the owner of NeoGAF
is being a bad one, is slow, bad. Is unresponsive, is not really, yes. Is, like, being aloof. Like, the thing that is at the end of my story is, like, telling a little bit about what happened with the modders, you know, the people that supported and essentially have ran NeoGAF for a while Tyler has largely just been the financial benefactor of what's happened on the site. you know, we didn't get into this, but it's like, you know, earlier this year, like Amarox, who was a notable mod for a number of years, who was very active, if you, like me, were in a lot of the political threads in the off-topic forums of Gaming Age, or of GAF, and he was as liberal firebrand as you come, and then he was charged with a number of accounts of having child pornography. Right. Tyler's official statement, which came very late after people had connected the dots, was that, oh, we didn't know what his real name was, which a number of mods told me was complete horseshit.
Right.
And that they did know, and that the statement that GAF put out essentially, like, shifted the blame to, like, moderators for not doing their job enough to, like, know it was, like, it set up this situation where I think part of the reason, or I know part of the reason, the people, like, the modders, this sort of support structure of the NeoGAF hierarchy, the reason they distanced themselves so fast, the reason they just quit, was because, like, why should we stand by with this guy a second time? Like, he kind of screwed us the first time where we needed to become, like, look, like, there are always going to be instances where people who you think are good end up being awful people.
Yep.
And you can't necessarily know that, but that you still got to come clean about what you knew, when you knew it, what you're doing in the future to try and discourage it or whatever. Like, those are the steps you're supposed to take, not be like, eh, like, I don't know, didn't know the guy's name. Like, just come up with a bunch of sort of, like, bullshit reasons to hand wave it away. And so I think that's why you saw essentially a parade away from the site over the weekend from the people in the power hierarchy, because they said, like, this doesn't seem like the kind of person that's going to have our back. And so while they weren't going to sit around and wait to see what evidence or proof or whatever, how all that stuff played out, I think there was a lack of faith in the very person who was supposed to be the one, like, the leader of that place. And it by all accounts seemed to have failed the people below him. Yep. And I think the fact that he only responded to my emails, the fact that there was no public statement yet, I think speaks to that sort of haphazard, inconsistent leadership that, like I said, like, as someone that, you know, took this incredibly seriously, reported it out, because that was as much as my gut reaction was like, ah, shit, I check NeoGAF any morning. Like, I don't know what's going on in the world right now.
You went to go check for the post.
Yeah, when I posted my story, I was like, I wonder what NeoGAF thinks of my story. Just having the mental disconnect, because on my bookmark bar in my Chrome browser, like, one of the ones in the center is GAF. One of the icons on the homepage of my phone is GAF. Like, I owe my career to GAF. I owe a lot of the internet relationships I have to, like, dear friends of mine to that place. And so I have, like, super complicated feelings about, like, the death of a community, which is something we can maybe think about and talk about later. I want distance from this. I don't want to do what you said, which is, like, to immediately pivot to, like, so what does this mean for GAF? But I do think that Tyler is not necessarily speaking as someone that was part of that community, separate from my own reporting, that does not seem like the way forward. The way forward was probably for him to divest his financial interest in NeoGAF, to hand it off to someone else. And maybe that would have been a world in which you could have saved the name from being permanently tainted.
Right.
But by all accounts, it seems like, I think NeoGAF is probably just going to die a slow death.
And my hope is that, like, the communities that come up in its wake are going to do the opposite of what it sounds like Tyler wants to do with GAF, right? Which is, like, realize that you can't just be a space that is just pro gaming and that is it. That for, like, a mature space for people to talk about games and to only talk about games if that's what they want. If someone who wants to only talk about games can go to a place where they just want to talk about, you know, OT, Super Mario Odyssey, I just want a dope thread that it, like, looks really cool up top. There's a bunch of screenshots and GIFs that is like, look at how pretty this game is. And they just want to go to that thread that is a thing that they can do. But that for a healthy community to exist these days, like, it has to be a space where you can also talk about what happens when there are sexual assault or sexual misconduct allegations that happen to somebody, you know, or alleged against someone in the gaming community, a place where you can talk about politics, a place where you can talk about culture and art and about, you know, everything else that is not just gaming, because that will make those conversations that are about gaming so much more fruitful and so much more honest and so much more, you know, again, holistic. those are the sorts of communities that I hope show up in the wake of all of this. And, you know, shout outs immediately to our incredible mods over at the Waypoint yes. Forums, who have done an incredible amount of work. There has been a bit of an exodus from NeoGAFT and to a number of forums on the internet that have already existed. I know Giant Bomb had a big intake. We had something like 1,000 new members overnight on the Waypoint forums. So thank you to our incredible mod team who like really put in the hard work of making sure that that new audience understood the difference between NeoGAF and the Waypoint forums, because there are key differences. Like, there really, truly are. And shout outs to our Discord mods also, who, you know, less of an intake, I believe, of new users onto the Discord, but still a pretty heavy one. And so to them also, shout outs and thank you for putting in the hard work.
Come join my new channel, The Lament Configuration, where we talk about shitty horror movies. I started a channel.
Wait, did you?
Nice!
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick. Have you been in there? Are you talking about
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah, I've been in there. I'm talking about bad movies.
Oh, I gotta man. Add this in. I love bad movies. How do I do this if I'm a Discord...
You're here already.
Discord
you're,
challenged.
Or is this a bit? Are you doing like a...
if I'm having a Discord problem...
Danielle, you're in this chat room already. I can see you here.
Yeah.
If you know what the lament configuration is, I'm not going to tell you what it is. You got to figure it out for yourself.
Is that a Hellraiser thing?
Yeah, it is. Fuck, that was quick. God damn it.
God, I got it. I'm not a big horror movie buff. I'm on the outside of horror film the margins. Like I watch what comes on here or there. I actually realized this very recently. I went to go see Annabelle Origins.
Forgive me, Father. Of course.
Annabelle
me, Father.
Creation, please.
Oh, sorry, Creation. Annabelle Creation 2. I realize that like my relationship with horror films has completely changed because I spent like as a kid I was terrified of horror films and like would not watch them. I refused like very much of the belief that Freddy Krueger was going to kill me and that those films were documentaries or that like they at the very least like spoke to a real fear. And then as I got older and my fears shifted from being like men who had burned faces and knife hands to just like men what wore masks and hurt people or just small towns or like getting lost in the woods and a bear kills you, like, you know, adult fears. I started like being able to watch horror movies again. I didn't even realize it really until recently, but now I have this very detached I like the craft of a horror film, even a schlocky one, in a way mm-hmm. I didn't before. I still can't just like watch a bunch of them in a row. I still have to be in the right mood or like with the right people. But sure. I get it now, and it makes me. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole necessarily, but it's nice to be in a place now where I'm like, oh yeah, if I was hanging out with a friend and they had like Hellraiser 3 on or whatever, I'd watch that.
Yeah, the one that's a City Face Man, where the dude. Shoots CDs out of his mouth.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
Yeah,
yep.
The Hellraiser 3 Hell on Earth.
The
third one, it's where the series goes real off the rails. It's like fun in a schlocky sort of way, whereas the first two I think are legitimately right. like some of like really tremendous like psychosexual horror films.
Right, right.
But the third one, yeah, there's go look it up. It's CD Man is like what the fans call him, but yeah, he literally shoots CDs out of his mouth to try and kill you.
Wild. Very good. Perfect.
What a deep commentary.
Exactly.
Before there was Black Mirror, there was Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Oh man. Yeah, he's got a good face. All right, cool.
Search for CD Man.
Yeah, this is real good. They just call him CD, I guess, on the fandom Hellraiser Wikia. That's what I'm looking at right now.
Hellraiser
5
is basically like a riff on Silent Hill 2.
Oh, his mouth is like a CD slot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
and
bad.
He, and his head has, it's like, bad. CDs embedded. He almost looks like, God, remember, like, the King Koopa, the Dennis, King Koopa?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm
saying?
He
does.
Mean, but like it, he kind of has that going movie. On. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
God. Anyway, I hope that the communities that follow in the wake of NeoGAF can have conversations like these, but also ones that do tackle harder issues and like do have space for that sort of interrogation of some harder stuff. I'm looking at this Wikia. I need to get off this Wikia because I don't know what any of these.
This is good healing. You know, we talked about something very difficult and very worthwhile talking about. And then right. You're also allowed
now
to do some healing.
Bad Cenobites.
And now exactly. I'm it says Pinhead's Gash here, and I don't know what that's referencing.
There it is.
Man, the last Hellraiser movie, two ones ago, where Lance Hendrickson runs a Hellraiser website.
What?
Log on to be killed. It's.
Oh,
is it called
wow.
Hellworld or is it called Revelations?
Revelations is the, I think, was the most recent one, which is bad and doesn't have Doug Bradley as Hellraiser, so
wait,
it doesn't actually count.
Wait, then what's Hellraiser Judgment? Oh, that's the next one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's another one coming out that also doesn't have Doug Bradley as Hellraiser, so
what's
get,
even
at,
the
get
point?
Away from me. Yeah, but yeah, Hellworld is the video game Hellworld.
Okay.
Or, Hellraiser. Okay. It's not good. I mean, it's good. Like, it's good.
Yeah.
But it's not good.
Have you looked at the image of the blood pack from Blade 2 recently? I just need...
Yeah, I saw this mentioned in a different Discord. I did not, like, interrogate it. I'm going to look back.
Blade 1 is a good fucking movie. Two,
yes.
If you do a search, a Google image search for blood pack Blade 2, you just get the most, like, 1999 looking, like... all black leather, everything. That movie
I'm
came
looking
out in 2002.
At it now.
I loved Blade. Oh my god, I loved that movie. That like a opening scene in the club. God damn, that was like
I think the first.
That
two
was
Blade
John
movies.
Wick before John Wick.
Oh yeah, yep. absolutely. Fuck, I love Blade so much. I love. Why don't they make a good new Blade movie? Why was there never a good Blade game?
Yeah, you got
anyway.
All the parts. Like,
this is, I'm going to keep falling down. Yeah, exactly.
You got all the parts. I mean,
there
come
are,
on.
Everything you would ever want from Blade is in video games already.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's true.
There are, like, special vampires you fight who could be good boss fights.
Blade Immersive there, Sim. Come on, Arcane.
Or just, like, I mean, like, here's the actual problem is we talked about New York Witcher. Blade is literally already New York Witcher.
Yeah, yep.
Like, already. It's just Blade. Oh,
it's
man.
True.
God.
That's real good.
I think that's probably going to do it for us. Yeah. We probably don't have time for questions. We've already gone longer than we intended to today. It's been a long day.
Yeah, but we'll revisit this stuff on Friday. So if people have questions and we'll see, it'd be nice to give us some separation from everything. You know, we'll see where it goes. You know, I'm not super interested in like following all the machinations of where this goes from here. Yep. I feel like we kind of set our piece. But if people have like questions about like maybe the larger sort of stories of this, like, you know, like the story of like a death of a community and it was your community.
Right.
Like if there are stuff like that that's happened to you out there, I'm sure that's stuff that we can kind of meditate on Friday.
Friday's also going to be a wild one because it's October 27th.
Oh, boy.
Oh, fuck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Mario. Mario that day.
And Assassin's Creed.
Wolfenstein.
It is going to be a wild one.
I might actually be able to do some Assassin's Creed streaming tomorrow, believe
Ooh.
It or not.
Ooh.
I need to double check the streaming embargo on that, but yeah, tomorrow's the 24th, right?
Yep.
Yeah, at noon tomorrow I can do some streaming of Assassin's Creed.
I should be able to do stuff with Mario on Friday. So,
awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
Looking forward to talking about that.
Look forward to all that this week. It is gonna be a big one for everyone. So that sounded way more ominous than I intended it to be.
It's
going to be a big one.
Well, you know, Pinhead's Gash. You know, I'm looking into this now, and Pinhead's Gash is going to be a big one. So.
Oh, okay, cool. Great.
I might have to watch Hellraiser 3 tonight.
I might too, actually.
Jesus Christ. All right, I am going to go eat food for the first time today. That's my plan. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker or probably maybe at the diner in my neighborhood. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to go yet. I don't know what I'm going to eat.
Get some
food. I want to go for a walk. I want to like go get my head clear after all this.
I'm getting on an ambulance after this. So, you know.
Jesus.
Be,
go
be
help
fun.
People. Nice. Have fun. Patrick, where can people find you besides an ambulance, Danielle?
At Danielle RI on Twitter.
Awesome. And Patrick, what about you?
You can find me at Patrick Klepek.
You can find everything we do at waypointadvice.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. Follow us over on Facebook at facebook.com/waypointvice. I said this on a stream, I think, earlier today, but even if you barely go on Facebook, go on Facebook and follow us. That sounds like silly, but it does actually help. The algorithm is a mysterious god. It is hard to understand how it works, but the thing I do know is, like in video games, it works better if the number goes up. So go like us over on Facebook if you enjoy the show. Seriously, it will help. Other than that, you can find everything we do all week on all the places I already said. So look forward to that. Shout out to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. If you do have questions to send in about anything we talked about today, you can send them over to gaming@vice.com. And shout outs to Danielle, who's going to edit this today, I think.
Oh, so, yeah.
Shout outs
again to
Danielle.
I'm your podcast producer today, kids.
Hell yeah. And double shout outs again to the mods, the great Waypoint community mods over at our forums and on our Discord. That's going to do it. Danielle, what do we say to them?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace. Rob's not here today, so he can't fuck it up.